Okay.
Miss Abraham just joined, so it's two more.
Okay. Good morning, colleagues. Let me welcome members of the Standing Committee Finance. Welcome the colleagues from the NCOP, from provincial legislatures who are in attendance. Welcome the support team of SCOF, the legal services, PBO, media, and the public. The meeting is officially open. Do we have apologies, Alan?
Chair, from the Standing Committee on Finance, no apologies. But administratively, we have an apology from the CFO, Ms. November, or acting CFO, Ms. November, and then the head of the Treasury Advice Office, Mr. McGregor.
Okay, those are the apologies. Let's move to item two, briefing by the Parliamentary Legal Services on the review of the financial management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act, as amended, and the work done by relevant structures on the matter, including the Speaker's Forum. Who's briefing us, Alan?
It's Advocate Charmaine Fanamareva. She is online, Chair.
Good morning, Chair.
Over to you, Charmaine.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to you and good morning to the members. Members, I'm going to brief you on work done in respect of a review of the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act. The presentation is quite extensive. I do apologize for that, but I think it is just indicative of the amount of work that has been done for the committee to consider, of course. I am going to do my best to not go over an hour. I'll keep my eye on the clock, but like I say, it is a lot of work. If I go too slow or too fast, please alert me and I will either speed up or slow down. I'm going to share my screen and then I'm going to turn my video off just to ensure that I have best reception when presenting to you. Okay, I hope that you can see a presentation. I don't see a lot. I know there's a red line around my presentation, so I hope that means the committee can see it. If I may perhaps just start and explain where this whole act that we are dealing with, how it originated, where it came from, what its history is. And you will understand the reason for me doing that when I get to the current process. The Financial Management of Parliament Bill, it was a committee bill. It was initiated by the then Portfolio Committee of Finance of the National Assembly. It was introduced in the Assembly in 2008, and it was passed by both houses on 19 February 2009. And the President then assented to the bill, and it became Act Number 10 of 2009, as we now know it. Then there was a process around 2012, where the National Assembly requested the then Standing Committee on Finance to review the Act. And basically, this had to do with the application of the Act. A big focus was placed on provincial legislatures and making sure that it's clear that they are included in its application. And it, again, by way of a committee bill, the Standing Committee on Finance then initiated a bill to amend the Act, and they introduced that bill 1 of 2014 on 6 February 2014. This bill was passed by both houses in July 2014, and it became Act Number 34 of 2014. So the Act has one amendment. Then we come to the current process. So first off, we need to understand that legislation cannot be static. Regular review and adjustment of legislation is required to ensure that we continuously improve and make sure that the policy that the legislation is embodying is as effective as possible. So in March 2021, the National Assembly adopted a resolution asking the Standing Committee on Finance to review the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act as amended, if necessary, to introduce amending legislation and also to take into account work done already by other structures. Then in May, the acting speaker wrote to the chairperson asking the committee to prioritize this review. So today, of course, the committee is now being briefed on the work done by the structures. And I would just like to point out that the executive authority, so the speaker and the chairperson, will still be briefed on this work. Of course, because, and you will see from the next slide, because it has come such a long way from 2017, we've had more than one speaker and chairperson involved in the process. There's also a process to issue regulations, to make regulations under the Act, and the Executive Authority will be briefed on both the regulations and these proposed amendments. So speaking now to the work done by relevant structures, you will see that in 2016, the then Speaker and Chairperson approved a review of the Act. In 2017, the Chief Financial Officers in the legislative sector came together, they discussed the Act, they worked through the Act, and they identified some concerns and suggested some amendments. Most of these concerns had to do, again, with the application of the Act. It had to do with making sure that the Act is aligned with other legislation, making sure that the Act is aligned to current best practice. So that was mostly the concerns that have been identified, and I will take you through them as the presentation goes. Between 2017 and 2018, the Constitutional Legal Services Office, which I'm a part of, we also then acted on this instruction from the Speaker and Chairperson. We identified some technical corrections to the Act. So these relate to aligning terminology in the Act, making sure that we use the same word for the same concept, and that if it's not the same concept, that we use different words, and so on. But I will also take the committee through that. Then our office also developed some draft amendments that could address these concerns of the CFOs and also the technical corrections. There were also a lot of sector workshops held. Mainly these were attended by chief financial officers of the various provincial legislatures and legal advisors of the various provincial legislatures, and further inputs were made. These draft amendments were also presented to the Secretaries Association and to the Speakers Forum. So this is just to indicate to the committee, there has been a lot of work done. It came over a couple of years, and there has been extensive consultation within provinces. When the committee consider this, the committee can be assured that the provincial legislatures are definitely on board with these proposals. In 2019, there was then a resolution by the Speakers Forum that the proposed amendments are in fact endorsed and it should be considered through the parliamentary process. So if I then can start with the actual proposals for amendment. The first proposal, the first amendment to the Act brought in an interpretation format where the Act applies to provincial legislatures, but we interpret it. So in other words, when we read the Act, we are actually, we need to read in provincial legislature or speak of a provincial legislature into the Act. It is not clearly stated in each section. And there was a proposal that this is creating interpretation concerns, and that it would be better if Section 3 is repealed in totality, and that the terminology is rather replaced throughout the Act. In other words, if you read a section, you don't have to interpret. You will know who it applies to and how it applies. So if this is accepted, there will be some consequential amendments. For instance, legislature will have to be both national and provincial legislatures. Parliament, wherever that appears, will read legislature. We'll have to distinguish between national and provincial concepts, for instance, in respect of revenue fund, rules, treasury. Something that I didn't specifically mention here is that there are some actions that only the executive authority of Parliament can execute, for instance, to make regulations. So that will also have to be clearly indicated. It will have to be the executive authority of Parliament that makes regulations. So that is the first proposal, and it's one of the bigger effects on the Act if accepted. Then if we look at some terminology and technical amendments, I'm not going to spend too much time on these. They are definitely technical in nature. It is simply really a proposal to clean the Act up and align it with drafting terminology and try and make interpretation a little bit easier. So for instance, this includes adjusting the definition of financial year so that it refers to an accounting period. When we talk about delegations, we should limit it to the officials that we are actually defining as officials. If we use a phrase like unauthorized, irregular, or fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we should try and have the same phrase throughout the Act. So for instance, in Section 11, the word expenditure is repeated in the phrase. Changing the word the to this before Act, because we define this Act and not the Act. Providing this in Section 17.2, we have almost something that is very similar to Section 18.1b, but 18.1b provides for own amounts and donor funds, but 17.2 does not refer to donor funds. The proposal is to add it also there because it deals with the same revision aspect. Proposing correcting of spelling, proposing changing the word deliberately in Section 69 to intentionally, simply because intention is more often used in legislation. writing the names of the NA and the NCOP in full, rather referring to the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, and then proposing that when we look at the regulations on a supply chain management system, that we add the word at least in Schedule 3, as Section 40F speaks of at least. But then when you get to Schedule 3, there's only a list and it seems to be limiting. There's a bit of a contradiction if you start working with interpretation of laws. Further, to align terminology with existing practices, for instance, the word debt is no longer used. It's now accounts payable with credit accounts receivable, replacing amount with the word transaction. Also aligning the Financial Management of Parliament Act with other acts. So for instance, in definitions, our act uses annual national budget, while the PFMA uses national annual budget. Months, the definition of month can be deleted because it's already defined in the Interpretation Act. Aligning the categories in person or in the employee of the state with other relevant acts. There was a proposal from the CFOs to remove references to the PFMA, but our office advised that this is not possible because the PFMA, there is an interaction between this act and the PFMA, and what we can rather do is to just clarify which sections are clearly applicable. So for instance, when you look at this definitions of standards of GRAP and your accounting standards board, So we can rather align and make sure that we have a good alignment and that it's clear what the relationship is, rather than just removing all references to the PFMA. There's also a proposal that the Financial Management of Parliament Act prevail in the event of conflicts with other acts. This would specifically, if we think about some procurement acts, it's not necessarily that there's a conflict, but when it comes to interpretation, such a section will make it clear that if there is a possible conflict in interpretation, that the legislature will follow whatever is stated in the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act. Then there's also a proposal, and this specifically now came up with the emergency situations that we've had with COVID-19, the fire at Parliament, something that the FMPA does not currently provide for. So what we have in the PFMA is provision for exemptions. And it states that the minister, by notice in the Government Gazette, may exempt an institution from specific provisions. So for instance, this could be if a report has to be within 30 days, there could be an exemption made. And this is something that could be of use where, especially like I said, with the COVID or the fire, where it is something that wasn't foreseen, and to amend the act in order to now comply is a much lengthier process. So that is another proposal there. Then also more technical, just replacing missing words. Where there's duplication of requirements, for instance, Section 27 refers to delegations, which are already provided for in Section 10. But on the other hand, combining some sections to make sure that it reads easier. For instance, between Section 7 and 24 and 35, to rather generalize your requirements in respect of systems and procedures for effective implementation of regulations. Because in Section 24, it only applies, this requirement only applies to banking, cash and investment. And it would be better, or the proposal is that it would be better if this applies to all these kinds of systems and procedures. And then also, for instance, moving requirements that must be complied with before the accounting officer may transfer funds from Section 35 to Section 7, which speaks to the accounting officer. Then, of course, if this is accepted, Section 24 would then be deleted because this power can be put into regulations under Section 65. There's also a proposal to move Section 36 to Section 33, so that when we look at spending, that it is in accordance with approved budget, that this is listed with expenditure responsibilities instead of being on its own. There's also a proposal to move provisions that deal with personal or financial interests, so that it is in separate subsections. So it is currently in one, but if you read it, there could be an interpretation concern. So it might be argued that the requirement is only applicable to some of the members and the appointment to some of the members, while in fact it is, of course, applicable to all. More terminology and technical is where we're using multiple words for one concept or the same word for multiple concepts. So for instance, in this regard, one is the word instruction, which are used in sections 37 and 66, but in fact refers to different concepts. So the proposal is that the one be amended to read determination, and then of course the necessary and consequential amendments be made in the act as well. So it is quite clear how an instruction will work and how, if the word is accepted, a determination works. Then if we look at, for instance, sections 5 and 6, the executive authority is responsible for sound financial management, but the accounting officer is just responsible for financial management. And it seems minor, but when it comes to interpretation of laws, something like that might at some point be used to either, you know, create a loophole or something like that. So the proposal is to just align that and make sure that it reads similarly. Then we also have the words policy, system, regulations that are used for the same concept. All of these actually refer to regulations under Section 65. But sometimes we talk about a policy, sometimes we talk about a system. And it does cause confusion because these are, in fact, very different terminologies in legislative development. So the proposal is that all of that wording be identified for what it is. If it is a regulation under Section 65, that we rather refer to it as a regulation. Then some of the descriptions in the Act in sections repeat definitions. The one where we recommend that the definition is actually deleted is that of the executive authority, because it's repeated in Section 5. And in fact, if you look at it there, it contains substantive provisions. Now, we don't want substantive provisions in a definition. So it is more appropriate in Section 5, and that would be the proposal there. If we look at Section 2, it refers again to the oversight mechanism, which is defined, so we need not describe it again. The same in respect of official. We don't have to say official of Parliament. It is, in fact, defined. Employees should rather read official because that is the defined word. Section 7, the same in respect of accounting officer. And then the same in respect of prescribed. In respect of drafting conventions, we propose that we correct the long title. It is drafted differently from most acts. In respect of definitions, the phrase accounting standard board is only used once in the act, and then we can rather just insert it where it is in fact used. Definitions of oversight mechanism and a person in the employer's estate are not alphabetical. And then also to insert the word and after the second last definition. In Section 2, to remove the article this from the heading and correct the introductory sentence. These are really just drafting conventions, just the style that is used in most legislation and to align the act with that. In Section 17 and 51, correct the way numbers are written. We do words from 0 to 9 and then numbers from 10 onwards. Correcting sentence construction in some of these, correcting the heading. Section 29, the heading of Section 29 does not reflect the content of the section, so just to correct that. In Section 44, we've got two paragraphs under subsection 1, but when you read paragraph B, you need to read A as well in order to be able to for B to be functional on its own for interpretation purposes. So the proposal is to correct that, so that you automatically refer to A instead of implying it. Correcting an introductory sentence and removing an article from a heading. Fine, so those were the technical amendments, drafting conventions, I think those would be less contentious matters perhaps. These now following from here on would be specific amendments. And I've tried to put them in accordance with themes. So first off, relating to the accounting officer. The purpose, the proposal is to expand requirements from section 24 in respect of systems. I've already said this, that it doesn't just apply to section 24 banking, cash and investment, but that it in fact applies to all systems, that we have requirements for how these systems, procedures and so on should in fact function. And then also in section 8.2, to there's a proposal for the initial performance agreement to be clearly stipulated when that is required. And the proposal is that it must be within 3 months, and then in subsequent years, it should be then within a month of the end of the financial year. In section 12, proposal that the section doesn't just provide for the responsibility of the accounting officer, but also for the accountability. So responsibility and accountability of the accounting officer. Then in respect of financial management as a whole, I know this is the whole act as such, but you will see what I mean with financial management here. So the proposal is that it is made clear that the controlling, supervisory and treasury functions of the Act are performed by the executive authority. There's also a proposal for a different bank account in respect of conditional and in respect of unconditional donor funds, so that there can be a clear distinction between these two. Then there is also a proposal that guarantees and securities in relation to public-private partnerships are in fact allowed, and that a legislature is allowed to bind itself to future financial commitments. And the reason for this was indicated as if you consider your current practices, this is what is necessary for legislatures in order to be able to perform certain functions to ensure that certain projects are in fact executed and so on. Reference to the word state to be deleted, as it is superfluous. Deleting the word operating before lease agreement, and this seems to be a financial or accounting standard where we no longer view a lease as operational or financial. You have a lease, then there is an assessment that is done. And then only once the assessment is done can you decide whether it is operational or financial. So if we say specifically operational, it means that we are hampering legislatures. So that would be the reason for this proposal there. Then there's a proposal to remove the requirement of a register to be part of the system of internal control. And the argument here is that each legislature should be able to determine the tools that forms part of a system. And in that regard, will be guided by the requirements of GRAP. Section 31, removing the requirement to maintain an accounting and information system, which recognizes revenue when it is earned or becomes due account for receipt of revenue. And the argument here is that if we do a consolidation, and also, of course, saying proposed revenue is required to be reconciled monthly rather than weekly. And the argument here is that the first is in fact covered by GRAP, so it is superfluous to state it in the Act. And the second, the monthly issue, is that when we look at businesses that deal in cash, such as restaurants and perhaps local government, there may be a requirement for a reconciliation and that is done weekly. But legislatures, although it is possible if you have some cash aspect, for instance, there's a cafeteria, that can be reconciled on a weekly basis. But it is simply more practical to rather reconcile on a monthly basis for that to be required by the Act, because even GRAP prescribes when weekly reconciliations are required. So the argument is if weekly is not necessary, it should not be prescribed by the Act. It should rather be led by the guidelines from GRAP. If it is applicable for weekly, then that will be done anyway, but the Act should rather just state monthly. And then the proposal for interest to be made discretional. And this is mainly because legislatures do not issue debt, and therefore interest should not really be applicable. It's more applicable to local governments. Then I will continue with financial management issues. There's a proposal that the accounting and information system be compliant with GRAP. And this, of course, then means that we are aligning. We are saying everything should be aligned with the current best practice that is there. And then also the closing monthly and reconciliation monthly. The proposal for this is because the legislature cannot spend more per quarter than is in the budget, it is not really monthly closure that happens. This is done on an annual basis. So it makes it very difficult for CFOs to comply with the Act because the practice speaks to a different setup. Then there's also a proposal to remove a vague description in respect of for good reason when you make direct payments, just to rather say that this is by agreement, because for good reason could almost be anything that appears good. And the question is, to whom does it seem good? In respect of Section 63, to change the requirement for the accounting officer to report on unauthorized, irregular or fruitless expenditure immediately to quarterly. The proposal here is simply for practicality, because quarterly reporting will allow the financial sections to correct whatever went wrong. There might be that little bit of leeway that allows them to correct something that was unauthorized, irregular or fruitless, and then it does not have to be reported as such. What we just want to point out here is that the same section speaks about reporting on the likelihood of expense of such expenditure. And the proposal would be for that to be done within a week or another period, if not immediately, because the purpose of reporting of the likelihood is to prevent it. And you can't do that quarterly, because then it would already have happened, of course. In respect of audit queries, now, this is something, I think this might be one of the aspects that will require a lot of discussion from the committee. There's a proposal that provision is made for the condemnation of irregular expenditure by the executive authority. And specific criteria would be where that was not due to an action of the accounting officer or an official, or where there are no losses or damages. So, some consideration here is would condone be the correct word? Should it not perhaps be a write-off? Because the concern is that this irregular expenditure remains on the books of the legislature for years. When perhaps if it could be written off, condone has a certain meaning to it, and it might not be the correct word, but the proposal, and I think the intention is that there needs to be a way for this irregular expenditure to be removed from the books. So whether it's the word condone or write-off, that probably needs some further discussion. There should also be further, perhaps, provision made for regulations to provide guidance if this proposal is accepted. For instance, so the executive authority is now condoning or writing off this irregular expenditure. But what if it was incurred by the executive authority? So there's a lot of questions still around this. We have also looked at what other legislation says in this. And yeah, it's something that we need to consider. For instance, the PFMA does not allow for condemnation, but the Local Government Act does allow for condemnation in specific circumstances. So although there is precedent, it is something that perhaps just needs a bit more discussion. It needs to be fleshed out. We need to make very clear when, if allowed, when this will be allowed and what the process would be. Then there is also a proposal that when we look at audit queries, that rather than require your accounting officer to prevent irregular expenditure and so on, to require the accounting officer to put effective systems in place that would prevent. And the argument here is simply that the wording saying that the accounting officer must prevent it, it places a very large responsibility on the accounting officer in respect of each transaction, when actually the accounting officer puts systems in place, and that might thus be the better wording to choose. Then also, in respect of Section 61, where if there's an audit query, then the accounting officer is required by the Act to address such queries. But the proposal is that this be changed for the accounting officer to develop an action plan rather, and to ensure that action plan is in fact implemented. And the argument further on that is that when we look at what is reported and your audit findings, because it must be addressed, the Act requires that it's addressed, it's not always possible to close audit findings timeously. So because there might have been a budget challenge, there might have been dependency on another organ of state. And in some cases, your audit findings actually might reoccur in different divisions. And it results in really unnecessary penalization of the accounting officer. Whereas if the accounting officer is required to develop an action plan and ensure that it's implemented, that means once the action plan is there, it's implemented, then the audit query can be closed. And yet it is still ensured that it is being addressed. In respect of planning and monitoring, the first proposal there is that currently the Act talks about the strategic plan of the administration of a legislature, and the proposal is that it is made clear that it is in fact for the legislature, not the administration of a legislature. It's a very different concept, in fact. There's also a proposal from our strategic division that unnecessary detail be removed from certain sections 14 and 15 to align to allow Parliament to adjust its strategic management framework to match international best practice and also the DPME regulations. So for instance, removing issues of performance measures and indicators, removing objectives. These are not things that should be, when we are looking at the strategic aspects and so on, that is not what should be in there. When we're looking at an annual performance plan, we should look at performance targets and not so much at the measures and indicators. That is for a different plan. So that is one of the proposals there. Then also in respect of your annual performance plan and budget, to rather align the time frame with that of the executive, because currently Parliament is a little bit out of sync. We are starting much earlier and we need information from the executive as well. So it puts Parliament a little bit to be a little bit off foot, catching us off balance when we start our processes. And the proposal is that we align it with that of the executive. Then there's also a proposal that tabling of strategic plan should be either 10 working days or the next sitting. The wording specifically here is something that should the committee decide, yes, this is what we want to do, we do actually want to propose the bill, then we'll discuss a bit further with the committee in respect of wording here, because we are concerned about the wording that was proposed. But there's also another proposal in respect of tablings, and that is that all tablings for all reports be 30 calendar days, regardless of sitting and so on. This makes it a fixed period, not too long, not too short. It is something that that everyone then knows exactly where we are. Then there's also a proposal that monitoring should be through in-year monitoring, that should be a specific requirement. And then our strategy unit division also proposed that to our regulations section, there should be added the power to regulate planning, budgeting, reporting, and auditing. This will allow for the operational side of planning, budgeting, reporting, and auditing to, in fact, be much better regulated in respect of regulations, which are your more operational type of legislation. Then in respect of reporting, The proposal was that reporting should change from monthly to quarterly. However, the Speakers Forum Finance Group and also the Acting CFO of Parliament and our Parliamentary Treasury Office recommended that monthly be retained. I think that this is also something that could be discussed. The argument was, of course, to allow for more time, but we also need to look at the balance of transparency and accountability, being able to address matters as soon as possible and so on. And then there's a proposal that when we talk about statements, that we change it to report in these sections, of course, 51, 52, 54, 60, it all deals with reporting aspects. And because this whole part deals with reports, the proposal is that it rather be worded report and not statement, because that also has a different meaning when we look at financial matters. Then also that your quarter report is proposed must be submitted to the oversight mechanism. There's also a proposal that it be that the tabling be within 30 days. Like I said, that there is this proposal for all tablings to be 30 calendar days. There's also a requirement that when we look at the requirements set by these sections, where something must be promptly referred, to rather say within a certain period, or you know, make it clear what is meant by promptly, or rather removing the word promptly altogether. Because of the interpretation concerns, one legislature might see promptly as within a week, another might see it within a day, and that can cause for differences, which of course, if it is not in the Act, is not a problem. But if it is in the Act, we would like to see a very similar action on the same thing. And then the same concept in respect of administration of a legislature. That we don't say the report is of the administration. It should rather be actually of the legislature. Then, still on reporting, in section 56, there's a proposal to remove the maintaining of consistency with other organs of state. And the reason for this is that if we are saying that we should comply with GRAP, then this is in fact sufficient. You know, there isn't more to say. You don't have to say more. We also need to keep in mind that section 216 of the Constitution speaks to prescribing measures to ensure transparency and expenditure control, which includes GRAP, uniform expenditure classifications, uniform treasury norms and standards. So what needs to be kept in mind is that because your provincial legislatures may not be the same as national departments. For instance, if we look at something like members' costs, currently we are combining in Parliament members' costs with employees' costs because we have to report on specific templates that National Treasury is providing. But the template for National Treasury is based on departments and the way departments function, not on how legislatures function. This gives a skewed reflection of what a legislature's books actually look like. And it is important that legislatures have consistency amongst themselves. But that, of course, could differ from what a department's books would look like. However, Section 216 of the Constitution will still apply, and so will any other standard. So in other words, if we say that it must be in accordance with GRAP, as I've said before on a previous slide, that will be covered here. But we cannot simply say, or the proposal is that it is making the practice very difficult for legislatures if we have to maintain consistency with other organs of state. There's also a proposal for notes to financial statements, certain notes to be removed. And the proposal is that this is also in respect of GRAP. And then when it looks, for instance, at senior managers, what is senior management in Parliament might differ from the Western Cape provincial legislature, might differ from the Free State provincial legislature, and so on. There's also a proposal that when we look at steps that should be taken, it should not just be as it's stated currently. You should also be able to take other steps. There could be civil steps, not just disciplinary and criminal steps. So there's a proposal that be made clear that it could be any steps that could be taken that are appropriate. The same is in respect of Section 62, in respect of the necessary steps. But there is a proposal to delete the issue of disciplinary steps against the accounting officer for late filing in subsection 2, because it repeats what is said in subsection 1. Then there's also a proposal for the deletion of the requirement that the Auditor General to submit audited financial statements to Parliament, as well as a special report, if the Executive Authority does not table the report. And the reason for this is that it is already provided for in the Public Audit Act. The Public Audit Act provides for the steps that the Auditor General must take in Section 4. And Section 21 of this Act also provides for the submission of audited reports for tabling. So what we have in the Public Audit Act is actually that the powers of the Auditor General is exceeding what is provided for in Section 62. So the proposal is to delete that here rather, and then of course the Public Audit Act will be applicable. There's also then the last one I've already mentioned, is the proposal to add to the power to regulate planning, budgeting, reporting and auditing. And I'm just repeating it here because I'm presenting by theme rather than by section. Then if we move on to the budget process. The budget process is, I think this is another aspect that will require a lot of discussion. The chief financial officers were quite concerned that there is an imbalance between the role of Parliament, between the budget allocations to a legislature, in fact, for all the legislatures, not just Parliament, the role of the executive budget and budget allocations. And there was a proposal that the role of legislatures in the determination of their budgets should be strengthened. And in this regard, the proposals include that there should no longer be a provision that Treasury could comment on proposed budgets. So there will be a process. The proposal is that the process for the approval should be between the heads of branches, and therefore you no longer need comments from the Treasury itself. Also proposed deleting requirements for consultations with the Minister of Finance. However, our legal services feel a bit just to raise that, you know, if we say after consultation, it doesn't mean, or just say that there is a requirement to consult, doesn't mean that there must be an agreement. And we need to also keep in mind Chapter 3 of the Constitution, speaking about cooperative governance. So, you know, just saying that we delete these consultations because we want to give a bigger role or a stronger role for legislatures, it doesn't necessarily mean that the role will be stronger. Consultation doesn't take that strength away. In fact, it might add to it. But the proposal definitely is to make sure that there are amendments to the Act that ensures a stronger role for legislatures when it comes to their budget determination. And then taken further in Section 17, to say that proposed budgets should be submitted for inclusion, not for discussion, and that it may not be amended without the written consent of the executive authority of that legislature. There's also a proposal that the Act determines what an adjustment budget of a legislature may include, and the proposal is that this is taken from the Public Finance Management Act, using that as a benchmark. There's also a proposal that the Act provides for expenditure before the budget is approved, not before it is passed. I think this is a bit of a technical matter. In fact, my office, Finance, Treasury, even Strategy has discussed this, and we're not actually 100% sure whether we agree with this. We do agree that a bill is passed and that a budget is approved. So that is perhaps the outcome that would be proposed there. Then sections 23, 2 and 3. Now, these subsections were actually deleted in the previous amendment. And what they deal with is the retention of funds that were not spent. And the proposal is to bring these subsections back so that legislatures may in fact retain appropriated funds that were not spent. And just a note here, I mean, in general, I would recommend to the committee to consult the Minister of Finance. But in respect of this specific amendment, if the committee agrees with this, then Section 13 of the Public Finance Management Act kicks in, and we must, the committee will have to consult the Minister on Finance on this specific clause. It doesn't mean that, again, like I said before on consultation, it doesn't mean that the committee has to agree with the Minister of Finance on how this should read. But it does mean that the Minister of Finances should be informed of this proposed amendment, and that at least comments be requested. It is for the Minister to decide if he wants to comment or not, but at least the committee will have to, from its side, have to attend a consultation to comply with Section 13 of the PFMA. Then lastly, again, the regulations to be added also in respect of budgeting. Then when we get to the next slide, this now deals with the supply chain management chapter. There's a proposal to delete the section determining the application of the chapter. We've also, our office has also, it was a CFO, the CFO as a group from the legislatures. It was a proposal from their side. Our office followed up on this with our CFO, and we cannot find the rationale for this proposal. There's no reason to say, you know, what the chapter applies to. But anyway, there is a proposal out there, it's part of the work done, and we have to present that to the committee. To apologise. Then in respect of Section 40, there's a proposal to remove a list of various management systems and only retain regular assessment of supply chain performance. Now, the problem with this is that, or rather the proposal for this is because you have, you know, every provincial legislature may not be the same, is the argument. But the proposal includes removing, you know, aspects, for instance, demand management, acquisition management, logistics management, and these are all necessary processes for supply chain management. So although this is a proposal from the CFOs of all legislatures, we would caution against that. Parliament, some acting CFOs are also cautioned against that. There is a proposal to provide for preferential procurement principles to be prescribed. And you will recall that before I indicated that there was a proposal for this act, the FMPA, to trump any other legislation out there. And this is part of that rationale. So that Parliament prescribes, or it will be the executive authority of Parliament, but it will be applicable to all legislatures, that all legislatures have their own preferential procurement principles rather than have to follow what is applicable to departments, because our requirements might be different. There's also a requirement, like I said, that the regulations must comply with other legislation. And that, as I've just said, to say that this act prevails, that the FMPA would trump any other act. There's also a proposal to remove the requirement to monitor the performance of contractors. Again, this is from the CFOs, the proposal. Again, there's a concern. Although this may not be applicable to all provincial legislatures, it is definitely applicable to Parliament. So if it is agreed to that we remove this requirement, we need to find a way to ensure that it still happens where it should happen. There's a proposal to delete the section dealing with unsolicited offers, but to make provision by way of regulations. Also to exclude political role players from being members on tender committees, although it is provided for in the current SCM regulations. We actually do not have this in the Act, and that actually makes our regulations ultra vires. And apologies for that word, that phrase there in Latin, but it is just something I think that is so well known. It simply means that the regulations in respect or that requires political role players not to be members on tender committees are in fact exceeding the empowering provisions of the Act, and that should make it invalid. If it is challenged, it will likely be found invalid. But the proposal is that it is not the SEM regulations have the right concept in mind, and it should be that political role players are excluded from being members on tender committees. And therefore, the proposal is to correct that in the Act so that our regulations are, in fact, then in accordance with the empowering provisions. There's also proposals that contracts may not be awarded to state employees, regardless of an issue of conflict of whether there's conflict of interest or not. And this would align this Act with Public Administration Act. And then also, when we're looking at Schedule 3, which speaks to persons with whom a legislature should not contract, these are people who are convicted of a crime involving dishonesty and so on, to take it away from Schedule 3 and put it into Section 46, so that all of these concerns are, in fact, in one place. Then, moving on to auditing, there is a proposal that the requirement of the word unit be changed to function, because some provincial legislatures have a smaller administration, so they might have an audit function and not so much an audit unit. You know, when we look at management structures, for instance, a unit might imply that there should be a manager, whereas the audit function could report to a manager that also has other functions under it. So this is just the proposal to assist some smaller provincial legislatures. There's also a proposal that the Act clarifies required knowledge and skills for the chairperson of the audit committee, namely knowledge of the legislative sector and or requisite skills. In respect of the audit committee, Section 48, it is proposed that the content on the charter and the functions of the audit committee be expanded on, and that we also recommend, there's also a recommendation that the rules that govern the relationship between the committee and the accounting officer, the executive authority, and the auditor general rather be prescribed by regulation to ensure standardization and to ensure the involvement of the executive authority in these rules. Currently, it is developed by the committee itself, and the proposal is that it be elevated to and standardized. Then also to require the executive authority to approve investigations rather than the accounting officer, and this is simply aligning it with best practice. The committee is appointed by the executive authority. There is a certain bit of an oversight function in respect of the administration, and therefore it is perhaps more appropriate to give them that independence in respect of then the executive authority to approve some investigations. There's also a proposal that the audit committee should report and not just comment in the annual report. And the argument here is that a comment is in fact not binding, but a report, this is something different. There's a decision taken and so on, and that gives a bit of accountability. Then there's also a requirement proposed that this committee must report to the executive authority at least annually. There's also a proposal that they should have the power to access personnel records. Now, the rationale here is that they might be looking at general aspects, for instance, of retention of employees, recruitment practices, dismissals. They might even be specifically looking at a specific disciplinary or a specific grievance. But from Parliament's internal audit, the proposal is that we perhaps rather provide for access to institutional records rather than personnel records, the wording, in other words, the terminology, perhaps not to be personnel, but rather institutional records, because that would aid in such audits. The concern, of course, is when we look at personnel records, there might be a fear about personal information being made available. Although we did look at the Protection of Personal Information Act as well, and although it is allowed for an internal audit to access, there are some requirements that must be complied with, and that, of course, will happen in practice and doesn't necessarily affect the review itself. But the concern might still be something that needs to be kept in mind, and perhaps the word personnel is not ideal. Perhaps it should rather be access to institutional records. Then also there's a proposal that says instead of saying that they must at least four times a year meet, or rather to say at least four times a year, but not as often as is required. So that there is this requirement that is clear. It must be at least four times a year. Of course, it speaks for itself. If it is at least four times a year, it may be more. Still on the aspect of auditing, there is a proposal that the accounting officer, and this is again a proposal from the CFOs of provincial legislatures, that the accounting officer not establish the auditing function or the auditing unit as it is currently known, but to ensure that it is established. However, if we look at the comparison with Treasury regulations, there it is clear that it is a must establish. From outset, it's not clear whether, you know, why is there a need to lighten the load, so to speak, of the accounting officer in this regard. Establishing a function is not that difficult. But in any event, there's also another concern in respect of the function and the relationship with the accounting officer and the relationship with the audit committee. And there is a proposal that the reporting line of your audit function or audit unit should be made very clear. It should be clear who they report in respect of performance, who they report in respect of audits, and so on. It is also proposed that you could move your audit function from Chapter 8, or rather to Chapter 8, so that you only deal with the audit committee in Chapter 7 in the Act, simply with the idea that if you are looking at chapters, you will then clearly see that you have this independence around the audit committee, and then in Chapter 8, your audit function still forms part of the administration of the legislature. Again, the proposal to remove the requirement to be consistent with other organs of state, as indicated before, if we comply with GRAP, all of these things will, and the general standards that are out there, we will in any event be complying, but it is sometimes not possible for a legislature in practice not possible is not the right word, we have been complying, but it is not ideal and not practical for a legislature to be treated exactly the same as the department is treated. Then there's also a proposal that there must be a charter which is aligned with best practice, an evolving audit plan rather than a three-year plan, which is also aligned to best practice. And an evolving plan is actually something that allows for more flexibility than a three-year plan. I mean, three-year plans are, in fact, amended every year. But to call it an evolving plan actually allows for that flexibility. It allows that a legislature can be more responsive to your ever-changing risk environment that institutions in the legislative sector find themselves in. Then there's also a proposal that the Act clearly sets out the powers of the audit function and their reporting obligations. Again, the proposal to remove the word promptly and to replace it perhaps with something like either a specific period or within a reasonable time. The further proposal is that, and I've already addressed this, that the accounting officer develops an action plan to address audit queries, rather than actually addressing such queries. And just to refresh the memory, the rationale was that it is difficult to close audit queries sometimes because there might have been budget constraints, you might be waiting on other organs of state to act. And if you, however, have a plan that is being implemented, the audit query can be closed. And then lastly, just that there is still this proposal for regulations to actually do the operational side and regulate how auditing will work operationally. Then there are some other proposed amendments. Some of these I've already addressed. Like the first one is that instead of having specific criminal and disciplinary proceedings, rather say any proceedings, so that you can also include civil proceedings when we are looking at the steps that can be taken. Instead of saying that you should regularly review delegations, rather to say that they may be reviewed when necessary. And the argument here is just that if anything happens when it is necessary, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do so every single year. Then in respect of political party funding, and I think this might be another matter where the committee will have to do some discussions. First off, the Act currently requires the regulations on political party funding. The proposal is to make it discretional. But the concern is that we need fixed and standard formula and processes. And this concern was also raised by the acting CFO of Parliament. So it is really something that needs to be considered. Is it something that can be made discretional? That was a proposal, but it needs to be carefully considered. Then there's also a proposal that the explicit requirement to consult with political parties that the Act currently has be removed. But now, first off, it is a constitutional requirement that Parliament must facilitate public involvement in all of its processes. So when regulations are made on political party funding, everyone, the public, and that would include political parties, will have to be consulted. But because it is in any event a constitutional requirement, removing it explicitly in an amendment bill might create the perception that there is a desire to not consult, which of course isn't the case and isn't constitutionally allowed. But still, sometimes we need to think about perception as well. And if it is not something that does any harm, what would really be the need for removing it, if it is something that is in any event required? But like I say, I think this is something that probably will require some more discussion in the committee. Then there's also the proposal to remove the requirement to provide represented parties in the Assembly with financial administrative assistance. But this actually just repeats the wording of Section 57 of the Constitution. So whether we remove it or not, it remains an obligation. Then some gaps in the law. We don't have provision for anything about gifts, donations or sponsorship. And there's a proposal that there be such a process provided for. And then also other consequential amendments that Section 69 in respect of offences may then have to be amended. So in other words, if we sometimes delete some paragraphs, if we add some paragraphs, that might have to be amended. Members, that is the end of the presentation, and I made it just over an hour. Thank you very much for listening to us. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, Charmaine, for the presentation. Members, over to you, clarity, seeking questions and comments. Honorable, let me note the names. Akbara Vessels, Honorable Abraham, Honorable Mavileso. Yes, Akbara. Wazir.
Dankie, Akbara, voorzitter. Chairperson, thank you. I just want to ask, firstly, with regards to the proposal to repeal Section 3 of the Act. If one looks at Section 3, subsection 2C, there is the subject section provides for an exception when with regards to certain sections of the Act where it's made applicable to provincial legislatures. For instance, regulations in terms of Section 65, and then it's read with a number of sections, including Section 34 and so forth. If we repeal that, the whole Section 3, what will be in place thereof to provide for that exception where it's not, where the executive authority is not made applicable, or where it's not concerning a provincial legislature? And then just one question with regards to the exemptions that were spoken about by Advocate Van der Merwe in line with the PFMA. It makes sense. The question, though, is, and this, I think, was originally also the question when this Act was originally drafted, was there is the whole dilemma with regards to the separation of powers. If the proposal is to say where there's an exemption by Parliament or by legislature, and the minister must approve such an exemption, such as the provision in the PFMA, I think it's section 79, will that not be problematic with regards to the separation of power, where the executive authority then actually tells the legislative authority what they can or cannot do? And I do know that with the whole budget process, that dilemma is there already, but is the proposal to make the wording and the approval of such exemption to have that with the minister, or is there some other type of proposal where the particular legislature's committee, for instance, in Parliament's case, it will be the management of parliamentary management, finance management committee, or in a case of a provincial legislature, it will be the budgetary and oversight committee. Will that not be a better position to take, that committee approves the exemption and acts instead of the minister, as it is with other departments and other organs of state? Thank you, Chair.
Danke, Akbar. Honorable Abram. Nope. Okay, I'll come back to you. Honorable Mabiletsa.
Thank you, Chen. Thank you, Charmaine, for the report. I just have two comments. On the proposal that you want to move from reporting monthly to quarterly, I understand that perhaps when you report quarterly, you'll want to be thorough and include as many things as possible. But also then, if you report quarterly, if there are things that must be done or, you know, based from the report, it might take time. And if you report monthly, I know sometimes when you report monthly, you are just going to miss out other things. So it's like, you know, you are just caught between the two. But for me, I would think perhaps monthly will do, so that, you know, those kind of thing, monthly will do, so that, you know, things will be responded to quickly, rather than a monthly might take long. And also on the issue of saying a treasury must not comment on reports for budgeting. Isn't it that treasury, when they comment, they just want to make sure that the budget requested is there, and also the requirement are followed? So if treasury now is being excluded in commenting, in the budgetary processes, what's going to happen, and what are other provisions for that, just to make sure, okay, the budget is there and the requirements that are needed for that budget request are followed. Thank you, Chair.
Ralibua. Noxie, are you there?
Yes, thanks, Chair. I'm here. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Over to you, and then Honorable Skosa, I'll come to you. Yes, Nox.
Thank you so much, Chair. Chair, just forgive me. I have a bit of a flu, so my voice will not be as sweet as it usually is. I greet you, Chairperson, Honorable Members, and all the CFOs that have logged in. First and foremost, Chair, for me, this was quite an extensive presentation, and it deals with a lot of items. And based on that, Chair, I am not sure if we do have the time, but I think if we don't, we really need time to go through the slides, slide by slide, so that the finance directorate within the institution really takes us through. That's my process proposal, Chair. First and foremost, I would like to check, because the proposal, one of the proposals by the CFOs has to do with the establishment of audit committees. And their proposal is that the accounting officer should not be the one establishing those, but he should make sure that they are established. Now, my question there is, who then accounts for the work of the audit committees or internal audit within the legislatures? Because for me, if we were talking of just general delegation of powers by the accounting officer for a task that is primarily theirs, you know, so that at the end of the day, we do not have something within the organization that the accounting officer cannot account on. I hope I'm clear on that, Chair. I want to agree with Geachtem Vessels on the issue of sometimes concepts being removed and nothing put in their place. And of course, in other areas, you do have concepts removed, but you have something else that is put in their place. The example I have of a situation where there's no replacement is on slide 13, where reference is made to the removal of the state, and it is said to be superfluous. But what do you then, what do you replace it with if you remove it? And on the same slide, section 32, proposed charging interest being made discretional. Whose discretion is this? I mean, we need more explanation in that regard. Chair, as far as I know that I was part of the legislative team in the Eastern Cape when we interviewed the current CFO. But see, I don't know, she might be the accounting officer now, but Ms. Mwagane was then coming in as CFO. And we had to ensure that the CFO becomes a conversant with GRAP. But I do not remember that we have the same for accounting officers. And therefore, I would really love to have some explanation as to why do we want the accounting and information systems to be compliant with GRAP. Maybe I'd need a bit of empowerment there, because then does it mean accounting not necessarily by the accounting officer? I need clarity there, Chair. My second last question, Chair, is on page 15, that is slide 15, where it talks to sections 14 and 53, proposing that it is clarified that the strategic plan is for a legislature, not the administration of that legislature. I'm not sure what the technicality is there, whether we are saying that the plan is, remember, the legislature is made out of really two divisions, if I may call it that, for lack of a better concept, where we have the political and the administrative. So maybe we need some explanation there as to what this refers to, whether the the strategic plan is specifically for the speaker and not the accounting officer. Again, issues of accounting will have to come in there. So I think my last point is on the issue of the delay in submitting and how the AG should not write on that. I think this is a critical matter for us, because I think before this because before this bill came like it is coming now, I think the finance section in Parliament did come to us on just that item, on just that clause, that they should be allowed to delay, and the AG must not make a comment without the accounting officer reporting themselves. And for me, that's quite ironic and contradictory, because the expectation is that the accounting officer, after delaying, because he is the one at fault, now after delaying, he should not be found wanting. Rather, the Auditor General must wait until the accounting officer reports themselves. Can we be clarified on that as well, Che? Thank you so much.
Of course. Honorable Skosan.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and greetings to everybody in the meeting. No, we appreciate the presentation. I think Honorable Abraham, I think she has partly covered me. Particularly where the proposed amendments relate to the accounting officer. For instance, on the slide that talks about the establishment of the audit committee, because the act in its current form says that the accounting officer must establish the audit committee. So the proposed amendment says that the accounting officer must ensure that the audit committee is established. And to me, that is one and the same thing, because the accounting officer at the end of the day is the one that must be held liable if there's no audit committee. So whether you write the accounting officer must establish the audit committee, or you write that the accounting officer must ensure that the audit committee is established, at the end of the day, it is the accounting officer who must be held liable if there is no audit committee. So I think the act in its current form, I think, is appreciating the fact that there would be people who would be assisting the accounting officer, people who are reporting to the accounting officer. But then at the end of the day, is responsible for that. Who must then account, because she or he is the accounting officer. So this responsibility is given to him or her because he or she is the account officer, is the one who must then answer and say, yes, I've done this. No, I haven't been able to do this. What are the reasons? So to change this and say, let's write, he or she must ensure. I don't see it making any difference to me. And except that one of the establishment of the audit committee, I think there are also other references, I think in other slides, just that I did not capture. I think these slides are not numbered. I think the proposed amendment, the sort of one to remove the load that is on the shoulders of the accounting officers, to say it must not say the accounting officer must, you must find other terminology to use so that the act is not seen as putting more load on the shoulders of the accounting officer. But the fact of the matter is that the accounting officer is the person who must account, is the person who must be held liable or responsible if a certain function is not done. So if you can try to remove the load, but at the end of the day, the accounting officer is the one who must account, because you can't have 10 people, you can't have the entire unit, you can't have a lot of people accounting. No. There must be one person, so that you know if that thing is not done, you must go to that particular person and say, why is this not done? So I think the act in its current form, the reference to say the accounting officer must do this, it's on the basis that this is the person who must account. And for him or her to be able to account, he or she must push the other people who are reporting to him or her to make sure that they do the work. Because if the work is not done, he or she will be held liable for that. And I think it's not only this act. You can even go to, for instance, the Municipal Finance Management Act. It will keep on making reference to the accounting officer to say the accounting officer must do this, the accounting officer must do this, even if other responsibility to be people who are below him or her who will be doing that. But he or she is the one who must make sure that that thing is done, because he or she must account at the end of the day. So the responsibility is given to him to say he or she must do this, but with an understanding that it will not be him or her alone. There will be people who will be assisting him or her. So I don't think some of the proposals that says let's lessen the load, let's remove the load that is on the shoulders of the accounting office, I don't think it's assisting. Well, I can see that perhaps the proposals, what they are trying to do, they are trying to make the act to be more simplistic, something like that. But I think in the process we might run a risk of creating even more confusion in the act. If we want to keep on making reference to many other people, or to say let's lessen the load, and then tomorrow you find that a person who must account then also get a way to say no, but the act does not say it's me, it says this thing must be done. So I think we must just be careful when it comes to that. The last point, I think there's a slight way, I think it speaks about your preferential procurement process, where I think there's a proposal that we must not use a one-size-fits-all, must allow different provincial legislators, I think, to make their own determinations when coming to matters of preferential procurement process, because the situations are not the same. I don't think that will help, because we are not a federal state. I think we should have one law that governs legislatures. But if we're going to say let's allow different legislatures to make their own determination when it comes to this, I think we might create serious problems for ourselves. And then people will keep on making reference to say, but why in Gauteng they are doing this? Why not in Limpopo? Why not here in Eastern Cape? Why is it in Mpumalanga doing this? Why not Northwest? So I don't think it's a good way. I think we should take all the issues that we think should be form part of the preferential procurement process from various legislatures that they are raising, and try to put them in one basket and agree, find things that we can agree on to say, yeah, these are things that we think all of us should prioritize on the issues of preferential procurement process. But if we say let each and every legislature, I think, make their own determination, I think we would be creating a very serious problem. Thanks, Chair.
Sir Thokoza, I'm Florentius Kosana. I see there's the end of Rasubupia, who's is the member of legislature. Hello?
Good morning, Chair.
Are you a member of legislature?
Yes, I am at the Gauteng Provincial Legislature, Chair.
Okay. You are welcome. You can ask the question.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Advocate Charmaine, for the presentation. I think we welcome the changes that are particularly in the SDM space, because it felt like we were paralyzed in some way to be able to be efficient in our operations. I just have some few issues that I need clarity on in terms of the proposed amendments. In terms of the what you've indicated on slide 7, I think in terms of the regular expenditure, the treatment as such, you mentioned that because the contract doesn't talk to that, is it not possible for us to adopt the principles that are captured in the treatment of the URF issued by the Auditor General, because that allows for the accounting officer to also remove the any case of the URF from the financial statements should they feel that adequate reason has been provided, and also the treatment of how you will treat the accounting officer and the executive authority in terms of where the transgression came from them. That's a question on my side. And then with regards to the amendment of some of the provisions of Chapter 5 of the SCM, I wanted to understand the issue around, I think I have the same question to say, if we're not uniform in the preferential procurement principles, then it opens us to different challenges that we currently are facing. So I think I would also agree with Dr. Kosana in terms of what he was saying earlier, to say we need to look at uniformity approach in this requirement. On section 39, I wanted to check if it's not possible to just in terms of the proposal that has been made, to maybe add just the responsibility of the accounting officer to, in terms of them establishing processes. I think probably adopting this from the PFMA in terms of for them developing and implementing effective supply chain management system. I think it will also talk to the proposal that was made earlier to which word do we use, system regulation or policy, in which case I would also align with us using supply chain management systems in the institution. I think the issue around the section 44, I also had a question to say 44 A and C seem to be talking to the same issue. Is it not possible for us to combine it? 4 A says members of the like, for instance, legislature may not be members of the committee, but it also on CSA may not participate. Can we not combine these two into one? The on section 46, just as a question to say, we also need to look at the word tax clearance, because it's no longer applicable. It's called tax compliance status. If we can also adopt that in that. I think in terms of the all the other aspects that have been mentioned in terms of Schedule 3 for SEM, probably when we do the regulations, we'll also take into consideration other issues that relate into those things. Thanks, Chair. That's my input on this. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Honorable Rasubucha. Thanks. Let me ask four or five questions. Charmaine and your colleagues, just to echo what the colleagues have asked. My experience tells me that we have to do a CS if we embark on a legislative process. Is it not required in this regard, or maybe because this is an amendment? If so, please clarify. Two, the consultation with the Minister of Finance does not mean that there must be agreement. It also goes with what you are proposing under Section 2, that Treasury no longer comment on proposed budgets. I don't understand what you mean, Charmaine and your colleagues, because there's one Treasury in South Africa. Are you saying that the legislative sector will have its own treasury? Because according to Section 216 of the Constitution, it says that Parliament should pass a legislation to establish a treasury, which has got those responsibilities that are outlined from 1A up from subsection 1 up to 5. So if you just inform the Minister of Finance, and if he does not agree, the legislative sector can just go ahead and do what it thinks is right. I don't know, legal and politically, what message are we sending? Because there's only one Minister of Finance in the Republic and one Treasurer. Because there's one thing called Treasurer and there's something called the Department of Finance. Treasury is specifically established by the Constitution for specific reasons to deal with the fiscal framework and DORA. So, are we having legislative sector having its own fiscal framework, DORA and all those? Because that capacity has been built in the National Treasury for specific reasons as outlined in the Constitution. But if the legislative sector just informed the minister, he says, but this can't be possible, as Kosana says, we say, no, we'll move ahead. I don't know how that will be possible. And then the issue of SPM, why, I think Skosana has raised that question again, because procurement is regulated by Section 217 of the Constitution, which also provide for a national legislation that prescribe a framework within which you have to apply the SCM. So are you saying that the legislative sector should have its own legislation and its own framework? Because I understand the legislative sector not to be a government. It's just an organ of state or an arm of government. The same applies with the judiciary. As much as judiciary is independent, that independence applies when it comes to interpretation of laws when the judges, the magistrates are in court. But in regard to the governance of administration, their finances, they have to comply with the PFMA and other legislations. And also the independence of the legislative sector. I don't think it is completely independent from National Treasury and the regulations. I think it is independent in regard to its responsibility, which is making laws or legislation, oversight and all those. But from the look of things, it's like we are completely moving away and want to have a legislative sector independent, unless you clarify that. But also, lastly, are we rewriting the legislation or are we amending? Because there are so many changes, it's like rewriting the legislation. Can you clarify what is it that we are doing that so many changes that we have to effect at the same time? Can we justify that? Over to you, Charmaine, and your colleagues.
Thank you, Chairperson. Very, very interesting questions, I think. I'm going to be paging through a number of documents, if you would bear with me. I'll just start from the beginning and work through the questions. If I see I'm repeating, then I'll just say I've already answered it. Starting with the repeal of Section 3, yes, absolutely. So when we look at if Section 3 is repealed, we need to replace the whole of Section 3 throughout the Act. So where Section 3 might speak about, if you read the Act, sorry, I just want to go to my Section 3 so I can just make a better example. So if we look at the Act and we see the word House or Parliament, then if we're a provincial legislature, we must interpret that section to read provincial legislature instead of House or Parliament. And then, however, when we come to subsection 2C, when we get to sections 65, which mostly deal with all the regulations, then we must not read in provincial legislature. So what we will have to do is, if this is accepted and we amend the Act so that Section 3 is in fact removed and placed into the Act itself, is when we get to Section 65, and just to double check with the wording of all those sections listed there that with which Section 65 is read with, to make sure that in respect of those sections, it is clear that if we define executive authority to include the Speaker of a provincial legislature, and it depends on the context where you are reading, when we get to Section 65, Sections 16, 22, 24, etc., when you read executive authority, it must be executive authority of Parliament. And that would then mean that it is only the executive authority of Parliament that may make regulations. And I think this also speaks to some questions that will still come, because the thing is that there are some aspects where we can have the Speaker of a provincial legislature do something in respect of that legislature only. But when it comes to something like regulations, we do need standardization. We might say that as a legislative sector, we have different requirements from a department, and some of our, the way our budget operates, the way some of our reports operate is very different from a department, and that might be so. But as legislatures, even if one is quite big and one is quite small, there could be flexibility, but our standards should be the same. So absolutely, there should be a requirement, and if 3 is repealed, it needs to that the concept of 3, everything that is contained in Section 3 needs to be then filtered through the whole of the Act to make it clear when can it be an executive authority of any legislature, and when can it only be executive authority of Parliament. And then in respect of the exemptions that were mentioned, absolutely. So when we look at the wording that was proposed in the slide, I simply copy and paste it from the PFMA. So they agreed that the minister may do that. And it was simply as an example to the committee of the type of remedy that is sought. So what perhaps will be something that needs to be decided by this committee is whether it would be the executive authority of a legislature that can do that. If we say PFMA says minister, do we say executive authority? And of course, this will now be of a legislature. Any legislature would be able then to do so. Or will we say that it will have to be a certain committee of a legislature? So that, I think, is something that needs to be discussed a bit further, but definitely not the Minister of Finance. It will have to be some authority within a legislature that will make that exemption, that will publish that in the Gazette. Then when it comes to in respect of monthly to quarterly, yes, I think the conundrum is exactly that. If you do quarterly, you do allow a bit more space. You allow for more room to move and for information to be included. But on the other hand, you lose out on speed. You lose out a little bit on transparency at an immediate level. So in other words, where we might have been able to ascertain that there is a worrying trend, or that there is a challenge, or that there might be some budget constraints in month one, we might now only determine it in month three. So there is that balance. And like I said, the proposal was for from the CFO for it to be quarterly, but there was a concern raised. And in fact, from the Speaker's Forum, the proposal was for that to rather be retained as monthly. Then in respect of Treasury not commenting on the budget, and I think here I want to add, bring in some of the questions from the Chair's side. The big concern that was there is that legislatures, when it comes to their budget, are to some extent, as the judiciary, standing at the back of the queue. So the picture that was drawn for us when this was explained is that there's a big cake sitting in front of cabinet, and all the departments are sitting around this cake, and they are eating from this cake. And then when they are done, when they get up from the table, then Parliament and the judiciary can step in, because we don't have departments that can sit around that table. And the idea is to give us a bit more of a say in who gets what of that cake. So how we do it is perhaps what needs to be discussed. Because as the Chair said, the legislature has some independence. We are one of the arms of government, but there's also there's cooperation that we need to do with each other. We can't just separate ourselves and say that we are like on our own. There's definitely interaction. I mean, our money still comes from the same source. So we need to find a balance between giving the legislatures more say in respect of their budget, but keeping in mind that we are still part of the whole. We can't now have a situation where you have the legislatures and judiciary sitting around the cake and eating all, and then we get up and we leave the rest to the department. You can't have that swap. So it has to be some kind of balance. But the concern was that there needs to be a stronger role for the legislatures in the determination of their budget. So what was proposed in that regard? And I think to some extent, perhaps there was a bit, sometimes we have a pendulum that swings and we are so cross about our absolute lack of power in determining our own budget that we sometimes swing to the other side and it becomes a bit reactive almost. And what we need to find is that nice center point. So for instance, the comment on Treasury not commenting, I agree. I don't see why they can't comment. We don't have to, as a legislature, when they comment, we should consider their comments and we can decide if we agree or not agree. It is not something that is an absolute requirement. So it is not if there is an argument that it is delaying things, well, then let's look at what the delay is and how we can solve that. But what the argument was for not having Treasury come in is that budget should be determined at a level above Treasury. So in other words, directly with the executive branch, directly with the minister, between the executive authority and the minister. And therefore, you don't want lower levels to get involved. Whether that is practical is, of course, another question, because how does the minister react? The minister acts via and through Treasury. So yes, I think there's a lot of questions that still need to, I mean, the proposals are out there. And like I say, the main principle and rationale for these proposals is to make the role of legislature stronger when it comes in determining their budget. But we need to perhaps think about if everything that is proposed is in fact that practical. And then there was also a question on going through the proposal slide by slide. I actually would like to make a proposal to the committee. And I actually want to make a note there, maybe do it last. If I can come back to that proposal on proceeding forward, I will make a proposal at the end. There was a proposal in respect of the establishment versus ensuring the audit function. So we must be careful. The bill proposes in respect of the audit committee, which is appointed by the executive authority, as well as the audit unit, or as the proposal is to make it a function in case a legislature is too small to have a whole unit dealing with audit. So the accounting officer, if we look at the PFMA, must establish it. And some of the concerns also expressed was that the relationship between the accounting officer and the audit unit or function must be very, very clear. And in that regard, I would actually support, or the members support is my concern. What is this ensure? What do we say must happen? If you ensure something, just establish it. How difficult can it be to establish it? This is not some of the other issues where, and I think maybe I'll now speak to another member's question as well, lightening the load on the accounting authority. If we speak about following best practice, and by following best practice, we make something easier for the accounting officer, that is one thing. But if we're simply doing something to lighten the load, so to speak, what would be the rationale behind that, especially in this specific thing where it ensure this is established? I do not see the issue in practice. Ensure that there is something, establish something. The end result will be that whatever is brought into existence must report to the accounting officer. So I think that is something really to keep in mind and going forward. Then also removing the state in slide 13, I actually just want to quickly, there is a specific reason for that. It is in fact, sorry, if you can just give me a moment, I just want to find it on my notes. What we have... I'm not quickly finding it. I'm going to find it in the document that I'm working with, and then I will say to you why. Slide 13, section 28. I apologize for that. Oh, when we say neither the state nor parliament is bound by a loan guarantee security or other transaction entered into breach of subsection 1, the argument is that this act does not apply to the state. It applies to legislatures. So the state's not being bound is provided for in the PFMA. It's already provided for. This act applies to legislatures. So 28.2, the removal of state there is the reason it is superfluous is because this act doesn't apply to the state as a body. It applies to legislatures. And therefore, putting in state there, well, yes, we know this is provided for in the PFMA, but anyone who, if the PFMA is amended and it states that the government may enter into a loan agreement, then the FMPA is not going to stop that. So that was the rationale for removing state from Section 28. So it is not so much a matter of creating a gap. It is actually that there is something in this act that is broader than its actual application. In making interest discretional, yeah, I think this is something that perhaps need a lot more discussion. The argument in respect of interest is that if an organization deals in something where a debt can be incurred, not by the institution, and where the institution itself becomes the creditor, then interest makes sense. Then you need to provide for interest. But legislatures are not in the business of selling or hiring out services. The services that are delivered are for free. So where interest tends to then come in is in the administration. So for instance, where an employee had a loan, wants a loan against his or her salary. Now, because of the FMPA requiring interest, there is no discretion to the accounting officer to say that, well, I understand your circumstances. It is perhaps a family emergency, hospitalization, something like that. And we understand your loan that you want to do against your salary. We don't want there to be interest on it. But unfortunately, we cannot say that because of the FMPA. So that is the rationale why it should be discretional. And I think the comment about whose discretion is a very valid one. And perhaps it should be made clear that the discretion should be the accounting officer or something like that, if, of course, the committee agrees that it should be discretional. Then the next, in respect of GRAP and how bringing in GRAP, and does this take away some of the responsibilities of the accounting officer and so on? No, in fact, not. So what we have with GRAP, and I think actually our internal audit explained it very nicely to me in one of the comments when I asked some questions. If you give me a moment, I just want to see if I can quickly find it. What they were saying is that, you know, there are best standards, best practices, best standards, and GRAP actually forms part of that. And by stating that we must comply with GRAP as an institution, the legislature, actually what it says is that we are complying with best practice. So the accounting officer, and GRAP is not just how you must do your books. It goes broader. It tells us how a lot of practices must happen, how we report, etc. So all of that would be then brought into your financial management of a legislature. And of course, your accounting officer, who then is the person responsible for the financial management, must then comply with that best practice. And in fact, GRAP is currently best international practice. So that is the argument there. It is not so much about an accounting system as that it is best international practice, and it is just currently called GRAP. It is probably something that we could also consider whether we want the word. And in fact, we will of course define GRAP and not just use GRAP. It's just colloquial that we talk about GRAP. Then the question about a strategic plan being for the legislature and not just not for the administration. I was actually hoping someone from strategy might be here, but I see that they have left in the meantime, so I'll do my best to answer this. So what we have is, for instance, part of our strategic plan is to ensure the reduction of poverty. I think it was our previous strategic plan that had that. Your administration of parliament cannot ensure that. It is the strategic plan for the administration of parliament. If you look at the administration of parliament, its strategic plan should have to do with how it supports the legislature, whereas the legislature strategic plan looks at the bigger picture. What is it that the legislature wants to achieve? So it is taking that operational bit out of the act. And in fact, at the moment, that is how we operate, because the strategic plan speaks to the legislature and not to the administration. The administration comes in at an operational level. And when we look at performance indicators and things like that, that is where your administration starts having plans, and we have divisional plans and so on. So the proposal is to simply make it clear that we are not talking about the support function when we're talking about strategic plans. We are talking about what it is that the legislature has as a vision, where the legislature is going, what it wants to achieve for the 5-year period. So that is the rationale there. In respect of the accounting auditor general and the issue of the delay in submissions. So the argument there, and perhaps it is something, and I mean, part of my recommendation to the committee would definitely be to have multiple consultations. And I think this comes to the sayers that the chair has spoken to as well. And one of those consultations that I would recommend would be with the auditor general, specifically on those clauses that affect the auditor general. But the argument simply is that the Public Auditing Act actually currently provides for much broader functions and much broader powers of the Auditor General than the FMPA is in fact providing. And what the FMPA is doing is in fact duplicating lesser powers to some extent of the Auditor General, and that in other words is not necessary, because we have the Public Audit Act, and that in fact does provide, and in fact specifically Section 5 of that Act indicates that there might be a referral of irregularities by the Auditor General. They have the power to take appropriate remedial action, to issue certificates of debt where there was a failure to comply with the remedial action, and then reporting any matter within their functions to the relevant legislature. So in other words, the powers are there. They are in the Public Audit Act. The proposal, in other words, is not to repeat the Public Audit Act in the FMPA, but rather have that in a separate act. So that was the argument there. In respect of preferential procurement, yes. In fact, the proposal from the CFOs is that there be regulations issued by the Executive Authority of Parliament in respect of preferential procurement. Of course, those regulations will have to keep in mind the national legislation on preferential procurement because of the Constitution, rightly as the Chair said. But it does allow Parliament to go broader. It does allow Parliament to, well, all legislatures, but of course it will be the executive authority of Parliament. It does allow for Parliament to be more specific than what is the case in the executive. We won't be able to counter that necessarily, but we will be able to go broader and more in detail. But definitely, I agree, this is not something that can be left to every legislature. It is something that will have to be done as a standardization for all legislatures. And in respect of something, sorry, I actually skipped a page. I went to the wrong side. So let me first go back. The establishing versus ensure, I've already spoken to that. Removing the load on the accounting officer, I've already spoken to that. Like I say, I think when it is something that we align in best practice, that is perhaps something that is absolutely worth considering, because that is what a review of an act is about, is to make sure that it is in fact more aligned with current best practice. But if it is simply to lighten the load, we need to see what the practice is, what would be the practical implications before that decision is made. And I think the preferential procurement, I've just spoken to that. In respect of the irregular expenditure and looking at the principles issued by the Auditor General, I think that's maybe just a comment, and I will definitely make sure that we do have a look at that, and that can also be brought to the committee for consideration. Also, considering adding the responsibility of the accounting officer in respect of processes, when it comes to Section 39, now, the thing is, it might be that you refer to another section, but 39, the proposal is to delete it. And what it actually says is that this chapter, the supply chain management chapter, applies to the procurement by then a legislature of goods and services and the disposal and letting of assets, including the disposal of goods no longer required. So it's not clear why that should be removed, because surely that is what the chapter applies to. But I think the proposal of adding the responsibilities of the accounting officer in respect of processes, or perhaps even just the reference to it, that proposal is definitely taken on board, and we'll look into that further and also bring back to the committee for further consideration. The question of combining Section 44 A and C, I will add that as a proposal for the committee to consider. And I think the other two comments was more in respect of recommending certain adoptions in respect of the tax compliance taken out of Schedule 3, Schedule 3 being broadened. Then the question from the chair. The first question in respect of a socioeconomic impact assessment. Now, the wording, socioeconomic impact assessment, is something that is required by cabinet. Before a bill would be passed or approved by cabinet for submission to parliament, it has to undergo a socioeconomic impact assessment. Because if the committee says that there has to be some amendment of the act, this will be a committee bill and cabinet is not involved. There is no legislative process requirement for this bill to undergo a socioeconomic impact assessment. However, that does not mean that this committee cannot do an impact assessment of whatever draft bill is developed. Or even if the committee says, well, look, we don't want to proceed on a draft bill yet. We want to first look at what should be amended and what shouldn't be amended. And that can also be done. And that will be done through the committee support staff. And a person can be procured to do an impact assessment for the committee. And the committee can decide what type of impact, in fact, it wants to consider. Because socioeconomic specifically look at social and economic consequences. There's also something called the regulatory impact assessment, which looks at red tape and things like that. So there's a lot of options that the committee can look at. And for instance, the Committee on Trade and Industry in the Fifth Parliament, I think, did a committee bill, a National Credit Amendment Bill, where that committee, in fact, asked National Treasury to assist it with an impact assessment. And Treasury then procured the services of, I think it's for 2020, and they did an impact assessment for the committee, and they reported back to the committee on the impact, specific impact of certain provisions in that proposed committee bill. So yes, absolutely. Although it is not a legislative process requirement, in other words, if it is not done, if an impact assessment is not done, it will not render the committee bill unconstitutional. It doesn't mean that the committee cannot ask for an impact assessment out of its own, and say that we need to understand what would be the impact, and whether it's of the whole bill or just specific clauses, that could be either. And then in respect of the consultation issue and the independence, I think to some extent I have spoken to that. And yes, Jay, I think it is a valid concern from the committee, because you know, when consulting with the CFOs, there was a frustration. There's an absolute frustration about the inability of legislatures to have almost any say in their budgets. And that frustration, I think, came through in the proposals. But like I say, with a pendulum, you know, the fact that we're frustrated on the one side, perhaps we should not just go to the other side of that pendulum swing, but find a balance. The concern is, and the proposal is, that the role of legislatures when it comes to determining their budget needs to be strengthened. And I think that is perhaps the proposal that the committee should consider. And then the how is perhaps something that needs a lot more discussion. And like I say, from legal services side, we would not recommend exclusion of any commenting or consultation. I think that it is very important for cooperative governance, especially on this where the legislatures are taking from the same pot as other departments, as the judiciary. It is something where we need to cooperate and we all need to function. So yes, we can look at giving more power, but we need to know that there's still some need for cooperation. In respect of the, I think the rest also just speaks about the independence. And then are we rewriting or amending legislation? Well, Chair, the proposals will result in an amendment bill if they are accepted. And it is absolutely up to the committee to how many amendments the committee wants to make. The committee can say, look, we can live with the technical issues. Let's not do those amendments. Let's just look at a couple of the issues, and then we just amend those. In the end, it is for the committee to decide. But when we were instructed to do a review, we tried to do our best and to look at everything that could cause interpretation concerns. It's not to say that it has caused any interpretation concerns, but of course, from a lawyer's point of view, we always look at what could be perhaps come be of concern at a later stage. Another option, of course, is repeal and replace. That's also a possible possibility. Then the committee will repeal the whole of the FMPA and it will replace it with the new act. And that would absolutely be within the powers of the committee, because that is an act of amending legislation. So all of that would be in the power of the committee. And then I think at this stage, if I may make a proposal to the committee, part of the work done by the legislatures and with support of our office was the development of proposed wording for each of the proposals. And we have captured it in a working document. It looks like a bill, but there's a lot of comments still on the side. What I would like to propose to the chair and to the members is that I would like to just be given an opportunity to include the comments from today into that document. And then perhaps that document can also be circulated to members. And I think it might add a lot to the presentation, because it's one thing to hear the argument and to hear what is proposed as a solution, and it is something else to see how it would be worded. So I think that might be a proposal. And then in respect of time, for instance, that was mentioned, do we have time? These proposals are still being taken to the executive authority as well. Parliamentary Treasury Office confirmed last week that they are trying to get a meeting with the Executive Authority, hopefully this week. But I know that they have been trying to get a meeting for a few weeks now. So I cannot tell the committee that it will be this week. I know on the regulations we've been waiting for a few weeks for that briefing to be able to happen. So I think that there definitely is time, because I would not I would recommend that the committee, for instance, don't advertise a bill, anything like that before that briefing of the executive authority has actually happened. But at this stage, the committee was asked to prioritize this review. I think the committee did so. And even almost just the briefing is a lot of work that is placed before this committee for consideration. So if I've answered the questions and then Chair made the proposal that I'd be allowed to include all of these comments in the working document that looks like a draft bill, and then that can perhaps be distributed for members, perhaps initially for consideration, and perhaps also for discussion in caucuses, because I think that will also be important. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Charmaine. Are there follow-up questions, members? It seems there are no follow-up questions. So it means we'll have to take the process as you have suggested, that there is still lots of briefings to be done to the executive authority. I think when we start with the process of submissions, oral and written, we should get the comments of the speaker, the chairperson of NCOP, and speakers of legislatures. But that as it may, treasury is quite very important. They should come and make a presentation in this regard, because the interface of treasury with parliament is very, very, very critical. And some of the suggested amendments here have got a bearing on what treasury is doing or its mandate. So we'll have to inform them that they should come and make not necessarily a submission at the right time in regard to what the bill recommends. Honorable Abraham, before I close, I see you are raising the hand.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Chair. Chair, I think you are exactly on the point that I wanted to raise, that Charmaine with her team should really help us, that we all move in unison towards the achievement of the amendment of this bill, that patience is exercised such that, as you correctly say, Chair, we have an opportunity to interact with the relevant structures of Parliament, as well as, I like that she also mentions that we also need to go to our caucuses and have this discussion, so that when we come back to the final briefing, we even before publishing, we all come back with mandates, so that as we listen to the presentations, we are also carrying the mandates of our various organizations. I think you have covered me in that regard, Chair. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Noxie. Yeah, so let's agree that should be the process as of now, and then at the right time, the legal team and the secretariat of our committee will have to advise as to when do we publish the bill or advertise for public comment, written and oral submissions. So for now, let's take the process as suggested. I'm not sure, Charmaine raised the issue of CS. Let's see how we also look at that, because it's quite very helpful, that process. And it's a scientific exercise. I'm not sure if the finance division of parliament has the capacity to do that. If they have, I'll request that they embark on that exercise. If not, and if it won't do any harm, we can request Treasury to do so, as much as they are an interested party, so as to reduce spending so much money with consultants now that we are embarking on a process to make sure that there is belt tightening. Secretariat, let's discuss after this as to what can we do to have a CS of some kind, so that we have got a scientific assistance in regard to approaching this legislation. Thanks very much, honorable members, colleagues from legislatures, NCOP, and all who are in the platform. The meeting is adjourned. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair.
Long live the Chair.
Malibongwe.
Thank you. Recording stopped. Thank you.
Charmaine, if you're still online, can you just stay on for a few moments after everybody's left, please?
I will do so.